I'm talking to Alan Lattimore, and Alan, you're right on the border in a place called Timor. Did you always grow up there?
Yes, I was born there in 1961, one of a family of nine, and I've lived there all my life.
It was a big family then, nine of you.
Well, nine survivors.
Yeah.
There were originally 13, but four children were died in childhood. We lived there, have lived there, have farmed there all my life. Was educated there. And
what was the farming life like? Was it a big farm or was it?
It was fairly big in relation to other farms around. We would have been one of the larger farms in the area at the time, but there were more people. Smaller farms did exist. That trend has gone now, that there are a lot fewer larger farms, but that's just economics of the thing.
And how many generations of your family farmed that land?
We've farmed there since about 1840. We moved out of Gowl, which is another place about 2 miles away. Originally, prior to that, we came out of County Cavan. Our ancestors came down out of Cavan in the early 1800s.
Have you any idea where they travelled?
No idea. Yeah.
Maybe the land was better up there or something.
I don't know why they moved down out of Cavan. I don't know why they moved down, but that's where we ended up. We went to Gowl first and then out to Gorgorgan.
Yeah.
And we've been there since. Hopefully we'll be there for a good while yet.
And in your lifetime then, growing up, you farmed with your father, I suppose.
I was the second youngest of a family, so my father was retired before I left school, so I farmed with my brother.
Malcolm?
Yes, and still do.
Oh, the two of you are on the farm?
Two of us are on the farm, yes.
And so because of your close proximity to the border, before the troubles broke out, was there a lot of traffic up and down there?
There was a fair bit of trade between our area and Beltorbet, Ballyconnell. Prior to 1936, whenever the bridges went on, Beltorbet would have been the town of choice of the people on the west shore of Lahearn, Timor, Darlene. Beltorbet would have been their town, but when the bridges went on, then Lisnaskee became our town on the northern side.
You mean when the bridge was blown up there?
No, when the new bridges were built.
Oh, yes.
Lady Craigavon and Lady Brookborough Bridge, which link Lisnaskee and Darlene via Trasn Island. When they were built and opened in 1936, Lisnaskee became our town to a greater extent, but still within our area up till 1972. There would have been quite a bit of trade up between our area and Beltorbet. Yeah. Until Allian Bridge was blown up.
Yes, and that kind of stopped everything.
That sort of left us living in a virtual cul-de-sac, because anything that came up from Enniskillen or that had to come back down. There was only one way in, one way out, particularly up where we live at Timor. But it had its advantages. It left us left the area sort of in it left the area sort of cocooned, because there was no through traffic or anything like that. You could do whatever you wanted because there was very little traffic. The only people who were up there were people who lived there. There was no sort of traffic coming from Dublin to Donegal. That sort of all ended.
I see. So it became very quiet then?
It became very quiet. Our area was particularly badly hit in the early years of the Troubles, from sort of 71, 72 till about 74, 75.
And is that because it was so quiet?
No, that was before the bridge was blown up. There were several incidents and several murders in our area prior to that, and there was the...
So that's why the British blew up the bridge?
The escape route. Mm. Terrorists had an easy escape across into County Cavan, and the perception is there was no security as such, or there wasn't appeared to be no intensity by the Garda to catch anybody or that. You know, it was a safe haven, what we would have considered a safe haven. And they moved sort of in and out of Northern Ireland with sort of virtual impunity. You see, we're so far from our nearest police station would be Canali or Lisnaskey, which is 7 or 8 miles away. So we were virtually isolated in that regard.
Okay, and so when it came to your doorstep and the violence came to your house, tell me what happened exactly.
Well, it didn't actually come to my house. The incident which I affected me most was our headmaster in the primary school, Mr. Saunderson, was murdered in 74. In the school, when the kids were all, you know, in the middle of the day, he was just gone down. And
do you remember that day yourself?
I do.
Tell me, I know he was shot in the
Elverne school.
In the Elverne, inside in the
in
canteen.
The kitchen, yes.
Yeah, but tell me, where were you, and what do you remember about that day?
It was an ordinary day, but he was gone down at break time to the kitchen, as he always did. And
did you hear the shots?
No.
Were you kept away and kept,
yes,
quite, you know, kept, the other away, teachers kept you?
Kept away from it, sent home, and, you know... It's difficult to talk about it.
I know, yeah. But I suppose talking about it is good too. Yeah.
Somebody who you sort of... He moulded your personality. You know, your young life, and all the people around there thought an awful lot of him. And it is sort of... It left us in a peculiar sort of mindset, you know. A lot of people couldn't understand why for somebody, you know, we obviously... he had links to the... He was in the army during the war, and he was in the UDR after that and was retired. But to us, he wasn't a soldier. He was a teacher.
Yeah.
And, you know, hard to understand why.
So that That happened in the 1970s.
1974. 10th of April, 74.
So you were just a young lad then. When, as the years rolled on, was there a member of your family killed?
I had a cousin, Richie, over at Newton Butler, was murdered in a shop on June. I think it was 7th of June, 81. But, you know, that was...
Why was he killed in the shop?
Because he was in the UDR. He was a perceived target. It was another Protestant business. And, you know, it was ethnic cleansing by, for want of a better word, and there isn't a better word. It was take the prods, take the businesses, take the young families out of the area. That's another strand of the strategy, as I see it.
Yeah. And so, did you know these people? Did you know the perpetrators? Would you have had an idea who they were?
No, I wouldn't have had an idea of who they were, but, you know, you hear... you know what? Like everything else, everybody knows the nationalist families, they know the Republican families, you know who would be rumoured to be the lookouts and all that. Like everybody sort of knew who the... Your neighbor, some of your neighbours helped. Our perception is that some of our neighbours were the eyes and ears of the terrorists.
And that
particularly in the early years.
That meant that you couldn't trust your neighbour then?
No, it was very
your
difficult.
Your Catholic neighbour?
Yes.
Or your nationalist neighbour?
Yes. Well, that, you know, it changed life dramatically, because prior to sort of 1968, 69, the civil rights thing, you know, the kids from the Protestant school, the kids from the Catholic or nationalist school all got on the bus, and, you know, you were as thick as thieves when you were very young. But, you know, once 68, 69 came, it was depending on who the greater number were. The greater number had the run of the bus, and the other side had seats, and you kept your head down, mouth closed, and got on and got off, and, you know, you had no interaction. It just changed. The start of the troubles changed our attitude, and my attitude to Catholic school kids of my age. You just didn't. You got on the bus, you got off the bus, you stayed among your own, and, you know, there was no interaction. Yeah. Prior to 69, 68, it was becoming more relaxed, but that's just how it was, you know. And you didn't talk because, you know, you didn't know who you were talking to.
And then,
better to say nothing than to say something that would potentially cost somebody their life.
Yeah, you can understand.
Moving on through the 70s, 70s and early 80s were particularly bad. Troubles really, as it went on through the 80s, it became more of a tit for tat sort of thing. You know, if there was a Catholic shot, there was a Protestant shot. In the early years, to us, it appeared to be all one-sided.
Yeah, you know, particularly in your area.
Particularly in Fermanagh, West Fermanagh.
But around your area, you had so many really atrocities. You had the Bullock family, you had the Leonard family on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
You had the Murphy family. Mm-hmm. Wasn't there a Murphy who was shot in his shop?
Yeah, 74. I would have been probably around about 12 or 13 when those incidents took place. Obviously it was talked about. There are there was a perception that it was a sort of a retaliation for Bullock killings or that, and, you know, leave us alone, or, you know, this is what can happen, tit for tat. And it is sort of set down a marker that, you know, if this is the way it's going to continue, then there will be
more killings
on both sides.
Yeah.
And that sort of ended the murders in our area sort of with that. At that time, it was bad up till that, but it sort of brought the thing to a head that, you know, leave us alone and we leave you alone.
Mm-hmm. Did any of your siblings join the UDR as part-time?
Yes.
Did you join yourself?
No. I did not join, and that's my greatest regret in life, that I never took up arms to safeguard my country, as I see it. But it was, by the time I was old enough to have joined up, it would have been virtual suicide to do it, because you would have been setting yourself up for almost certain execution, particularly being a part-timer.
And because of where you live, I suppose.
Where you live. You would have no.
Yeah.
It would have been making other men put their lives at risk to protect you.
Your farm at home.
Yes.
Did you have terrorists going through your farm, or did you have IRA going through your land?
I don't know. I wasn't looking for them.
Did they ever threaten your house or threaten your home?
I'm sure there was a threat, but my parents, in common with most Protestant parents, even after the Saunderson incident, shielded their children from the horrors of the Troubles. They sort of took the typical Protestant attitude: keep your head down and move on, don't see nothing, say nothing and do nothing.
Yeah. What a way to live, you know, to...
To let live and let live.
Yeah.
You know...
But that kind of fear of every day that something might happen?
There was obviously fear of, you know, who's next or who's going to be next or the like of that. But then, as when you move into the 80s, then it was a totally, particularly around 81, you know, the time of the hunger strikes. It got really bad in 81 because...
because of Bobby Sands.
Bobby Sands and the election.
Yeah.
Particularly for Manasseh to run the election. You know, up till that, if you were talking to Catholic nationalists, you know, that's an awful, those are awful people, you know, but in 1981, whether through intimidation or whether by choice, more nationalists voted for Bobby Sands than unionists, and he was elected MP, and that sort of was the elephant in the room, and it still is. To a lot of people, there's the elephant in the room is, you know, when Hardy come to Hardy, they voted for a murderer or a terrorist as opposed to a Democrat. And, you know, I can't argue with it.
But that intimidation you're talking about and animosity...
It may have been intimidation by Republicans to nationalists. I don't know. I was always brought up to vote unionist, and hopefully I still always will.
Yeah. And the you know, kind of the effect it had on your area in Timor. To this day, do people? I mean, are people still wary of people coming into their place? Do you know, or is that gone now?
To a certain extent, well, look at when you live next door, when you know, you meet your neighbour, it doesn't matter who he is or what he is. If you have an animal on the road, it doesn't matter whether it's Protestant or a Catholic, comes and tells you, as long as somebody tells you.
Yeah.
Vice versa, if they have an animal on the road and you tell them, like, that's the way it works, but, you know, that's because you live with people and you try to get on as best you can with everybody. I know it's slightly different. We're lucky in ways that we can still sort of make that connection. You know, not everybody's good or bad, but, you know, if you go into the city, there are proud areas, there are Catholic areas, and there is, you know, there is black, there is white, and there is nothing in between.
Yeah.
You know, there's black and there's white with us, but there's also a shade of grey in the middle where, you know, you live and let live.
Yeah.
And increasingly that's the way it is. We forgive.
Do you? I mean, if you met the man or the group of people who actually that morning shot that you're a school teacher, I mean, would you really look at them and shake hands with them or forget?
No. I wouldn't. I couldn't. I couldn't in my conscience forgive them. No. I'm not a big enough person to do that.
Yeah. It really left an awful effect on you. I can see it, you know. And it
no, I couldn't. Still couldn't. And I, you know, the number of unsolved, you know, murders, in particularly in Fermanagh, is, you know, it's dreadful.
Yeah.
You know, if I went out this morning and for no reason other than being in the wrong place at the wrong time hit somebody on the road and killed them, I would go to jail. Now, I would have gone out with no intent this morning to kill somebody, but I would go to jail for doing it.
Yeah.
People who went out in the 70s with intent to shoot somebody, A, have never been got, and B, even if they had been got, or are got, or will be got in the future, will never serve a day in jail. Mm-hmm. And that's hard to take.
I understand. Yeah. And
that's for me, that's hard to take.
Yeah. So
even, I know, Good Friday Agreement, all the rest of it.
Yeah.
But it's hard to take that there, for people like me who were always told that good would triumph over evil, put your faith in the forces of law and order, and you know, don't take the law into your own hands.
Yeah.
It's very hard to take the fact that the law will not pursue those people.
Yeah. So, when yourself and your brother Malcolm, now you continue, you're running the farm away, and you have family, do you? Or
no, I'm married. But I have no family.
And will it go out of the Lattimore's hands, or?
No. Hopefully not.
You'd like to see it continue on?
Hopefully I'll do all I can to make sure that it...
Because the land is important to you, is it?
Do you know? Belonging to somewhere is important.
Yeah.
You know...
And to feel you're rooted in that area.
To have a home. And be part of that home is important.
And just finally, you know, you took me through the 70s and the awful time there, and then in the 80s, tit for tat, and then the bombs that went off, you know, on both sides.
You know, look, it's... Nobody can stand back and say that it was all one-sided. Nobody would be foolish enough to say that.
Yeah.
There are things done on both sides that are not... shouldn't have been done. But it's difficult to...
Yeah.
You know, when you put your faith in something, it's hard to... We were always taught, put your faith in security forces, put your faith in law and order, right will prevail, but...
Yeah.
It's hard to see the way things have turned out.
Yeah. But you're determined to continue and to make it.
Nobody else would want me. that's where I live. That's where I hope to stay.
Yeah.
And I hope.
Yeah.
That no other generation will have to go through what we went through, or. Well, I say we went through, we as a community went through.
Mm.
I quite understand there are people who are more affected than I am. I have no physical scars, but it's...
But it left its mark on you.
It left...
Literally.
Yes, it leaves...
Mentally.
It leaves its mark on you, and you know, people find it very difficult to trust because of your experience, and it's still true.
Mm. Alan, thank you. I appreciate you coming in here and telling me your story. Thank you very much.